Let's call the agricultural poll board to order. As you can tell, I have a little bit of a rough voice, so I won't be hollering today. Glad that you're all here. The good news is we have a great turnout. Nathan DeBoom is going to be about 20 minutes late. We'll charge him a $10 fine of some sort. But the meeting is going to go at least beyond 3 o'clock. That will be the Rob Vandenheuvel rule broken. We'll have a guest by the name of Scott Slater come and talk to the board at closed session. So we hope you can all stay. If you cannot, we will understand and excuse you and bring you up to date later. Marilyn, you have that look on your face.
No, I'll just ask later.
So with that said, we'll look for Nathan to get here. We hope that Jeff and Paul Hofer show up. But with that said, we have a consent calendar in front of us. You had the opportunity to review it. If you have any questions or concerns, bring them forward now so we can pull them off. If not, a motion is in order for approval.
Mr. Chairman, since the water transactions are being taken out of excess carryover accounts, I think I would like to move to approve the consent calendar.
Second it.
We have a motion by Jeff Pearson. We have a second by Glenn Durrington. Any questions or concerns? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. I always appreciate it, Peter, when my board or our board votes with such enthusiasm. Sometimes the other boards don't, and I really don't know where we're at. You know, maybe Jeff Pearson could do a little bit better job at the advisory board and get him to speak out. You know, anyway, just a joke aside. With that being covered, let's go to business items, which is our favorite subject. Safe yield recalculation, Peter.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the agricultural pool. This item is for discussion only. The intent is to give you an update to the extent we're empowered to do that on how the process is proceeding. The group that has signed the non-disclosure agreement is continuing to meet. Are looking to reach out to the ag pool, and as you mentioned, Scott Slater will be here for a 3:30 meeting with the entire pool or whichever representatives the pool so designates. The meeting, the group that has signed the non-disclosure agreement is planning to meet again tomorrow, beginning at 8:30 in the morning, and go for quite some time. And they're continuing to work fast and furious, trying to come up with a solution that is acceptable to them and hopefully to everybody else.
Any questions of Peter? Any questions of Peter?
I have a question. Are we not wasting our time trying to solve this problem and the governor comes along and does what he wants to do?
Peter, Glenn and I had the opportunity to speak about that the other day, and we hear the governor saying many things publicly, and we're also told he says some things behind closed doors that also got in the newspaper. I expressed to Glenn that in order for the governor to take action in all of this, he has to do one of two things. He has to get the legislature behind him, number one. The second one is, if it's an adjudicated basin, as Glenn and I spoke about, he has to go to the Supreme Court to get them to overturn the judgment. Now, that's just my humble opinion. I didn't even ask Tracy on that one, but that's been my experience from the Paramount County Water District all the way through, that if you have an adjudicated basin and it was ruled by the courts, i.e. Superior Court, to undo any of that, he has to go to the Supreme Court. Can you answer Glenn's question?
I don't think I can.
Oh, Chair.
Rob.
I would just respond to my fellow member, Mr. Durrington, that regardless of what the governor says, we still have a responsibility to carry out the requirements needed to properly operate this basin. And the judgment and the peace agreements include provisions we need to follow. And I don't see anything that the governor says that should prevent us from following those and continuing to properly manage this basin. So I think that's the easiest answer, is water conservation efforts notwithstanding, we need to continue managing this basin.
Thank you, Rob. Jim Kuhlman.
I just have one concern from what I know of what the state has more or less said, that agriculture is not subject to that 20-25 to up to 35%. I would hope that the various entities that do serve watered agriculture don't try to do it off the back of agriculture, including the recycled water.
Peter, do you have a comment?
That was an eloquent statement, but Mr. Koopman, not a question. I don't have any comments.
Some of us believe what he said. Many of us are hopeful it's true what he said. So, Gene, thank you for that. Glenn, is that enough?
Well, I still think that any time you want to, the governor can say the hell with the people, change it. And he just goes to his attorney general, and she says, no, he doesn't have to go anywhere else. I remember, what's her name? The attorney general we had, Byrd, when she says, well, California has a death penalty, but under my watch, we're not executing anybody. That was it. We didn't execute anyone. Can't the attorney general we have now do the same thing?
I would suggest that my learned friend across the table, Rob Vandenheuvel, had the opportunity to serve the Ways and Means Committee in Washington, D.C. I see your transportation or your pickup at his office from time to time. I would welcome for the two of you to have a debate and come back at a meeting that if you can convince Rob, that'll be something. Okay, we're going to move on.
Okay.
Let me first ask Peter and the committee, do we have any old business? Jeff? No? Anybody else around the table as to the business item? With that said, I want to take a break here for just a moment and welcome former board member and friend of the dairy industry, agriculture, Ron LaBerchery. Ron, really good to have you here. Hope you can stay and attend a few meetings during these exciting times. With that said, let's go to reports and updates. Let's go to legal counsel report.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the pool committee. A brief update on the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act rulemaking process related to basin boundary revisions. I've previously raised this issue, I think, at your meeting, and I know that Mr. Slater has talked about it at the board. There is presently, between the Bulletin 118 basin boundaries that control, for the purposes of the SGMA's planning requirements, there's an incongruity between the basin boundaries in Bulletin 118 and the adjudicated boundary of not only the Chino Basin, but also some of the neighboring adjudicated basins like Six Basins and the Cucamonga Basin. And so that puts us in a position where we have some interesting questions to sort out, including whether a plan is required for the portions of the DWR Basin that are outside the adjudication, and what happens in the case where the Chino Basin adjudication, the adjudicated boundary goes into the Bulletin 118 boundary for the Cook Basin or the Six Basins and vice versa. And I've previously raised these questions with some folks that I know from DWR, and they've said that there's this rulemaking process that's coming, and now it's upon us. And at the end of the month, there will be three in-person, what they're calling listening sessions, which will be presentations, then open house style discussions, as well as a webinar that's presented statewide. There will be listening sessions in Northern, Central, and Southern California, including one in San Bernardino on April 30th in the afternoon. After that, my understanding is that DWR will unveil its proposed regulations at the Aqua Conference during a presentation there. And thereafter, there will be a series of meetings before the regulations are presented for approval. We are planning to work with the neighboring basins to bring the issue to DWR's attention for consideration in the process. And when we have draft regulations to consider, we'll bring that back for further discussion before we comment on that.
Mr. Harriman, when I saw this on the agenda, I had to think about it. How serious is this item?
Well, it like I said, it raises some interesting questions, and hopefully they can be addressed through the rulemaking. I think worst case, one of the concerns is that you end up having to go through a long administrative planning process to strictly follow the rule when the intent of the rule is already being followed because of the way that these basins are managed. For instance, this basin in its management takes into account areas outside the basin and how they impact the basin hydrology-wise. Mm-hmm. You know, Andy will tell you that Wildermuth's model doesn't look only within the Chino Basin as adjudicated, but takes into account lots of different things that are happening all over the place. It's a very holistic view of the Chino Basin and its management. And because of that, we think that the adjudication and its the OBMP, it complies with the spirit of the SGMA. The question is, might there be a requirement to go do a plan for a little piece of the basin that might not actually fall within our boundaries, and would having to comply with the letter of the act make us do something that's already there in compliance with the spirit of it?
Rulemaking processes or provisions always worry me. Peter, do you have any comment on this?
Well, the report by Mr. Harriman is a good report. It's the new legislation. We have to comply with it and protect the basin's interests. So I think the approach of looking at every aspect of it, not only the boundaries, but also the reporting that we'll be doing in 2016, is appropriate for Watermaster.
So I think the answer you just gave me is that you and Mr. Harriman will be watching it.
Very closely.
Thank you. Any questions of the board of Brad Harriman or Peter? Hearing none. You got through that one easy, Brad. Engineer.
We have a report this morning.
We're ready.
Yeah.
We have the time. You're not going to get cut short this time.
All right. Well, good afternoon, everyone. This time of year, we typically are getting ready to publish some technical reports that satisfy certain requirements of the Water Master. So I'm here to talk about two of those reports today. I'm going to be back at next month's meeting too to talk about more. We're only going to get through part of our reporting for this fiscal year for this report here. The first report I'm going to talk about is the so-called State of the Basin report. It's a requirement by court order that went along with the implementation of the peace agreement. And the State of the Basin report looks something like this. It's gone through an evolution over time since the peace agreement began. We began implementing the peace agreement. Now it is it is rich with graphics. There's a lot of maps, a lot of charts in here, and we put a little bit of text in here to explain what the maps and the charts are telling us. What we're basically reporting on are these five things that you see up on the slide here, the general hydrologic conditions in the basin and how that's changing over time, production and recharge, groundwater levels, groundwater quality, and land subsidence. I'm going to be touching on production and recharge and groundwater levels today, just hitting some of the high points, and I'll come back at a later meeting and talk about the others. So why don't we get into it? The maps that you'll see, and I'm not going to show every map that's in the report right now, but the map that you see up here is a production map. And it's a class interval map, so the larger dots represent wells that produced more water, and the smaller dots are the wells that produced less water. You can see that most of the large production wells are the municipal supply wells that are located in the northern part of the basin, and these are the agricultural wells in green and blue down here in the southern end of the basin. You can see, like in the Eastvale area, we have very few agricultural production wells. There used to be a lot more. These large wells down here are the CDA wells that have come in and replaced the agricultural production that's reduced in this area as planned in the OBMP. So you'll see maps like this that will not only be for the current time period, which this is 2013, 2014, but we also include maps in here that go back a ways at the beginning of the judgment and the beginning of the OBMP, so you can track how production has changed spatially in the basin over time. We also put together bar charts like this that describe total production by pool over time. And here we're going from 1978, the beginning of the judgment, to the current time period. The agricultural production's in beige here, and you can see how that has declined over time and is over the last 5 or 6 years has stabilized out here. The production that is reported on this chart right here is how we perceive production in our groundwater flow modeling. It's a little bit different when you look at Watermaster reported production, and we show both charts in the State of the Basin report, so you can see side by side the difference between what was reported to Watermaster and then how we model agricultural production in our groundwater flow modeling. The blue bars are the appropriate pool production, and you can see how that's increased over time. The red bar here is the overlying non-agricultural pool production, and the green bar represents the desalter production. I'm going to talk a little bit more in detail about desalter production later on. With regard to recharge, we have maps in this report that show all the recharge basins, and we color code them by the type of water that gets recharged in these basins. Blue represents stormwater only, green represents stormwater and imported water, and purple represents stormwater, imported water, and where we have the ability to recharge recycled water as well. With regard to recharge, we have charts in here that are bar charts showing annual water that was artificially recharged at all those basins for each year. In stormwater, you can see that it's somewhat variable over time. These last couple years, even less than 5,000 acre feet. Imported water, it's not always available. So in these last couple of years, we had very little imported water that we could recharge. You see the recycled water recharge ramping up over time. This IUA implements its program and expands it over time.
Question, can you go back to that one, please?
Yes.
Do you have any recollection? You're going year by year.
Yes.
Not month by month. Mm-hmm. So on the big production years of storm water, do you remember if that was early in the year or late in the year? Or is that something you don't look at?
Well, we look at it on a daily basis. Our modeling requires, it works on a daily time step for surface water. So we understand that very closely. Here we're just aggregating and reporting it in this chart by year. But in the Chino Basin, there isn't too much delay in when it rains as to when this water gets recharged. So it's going to be all occurring during the winter and in springtime.
The reason for my question is we can still be hopeful in 2015 for a late storm year.
No doubt.
Please go ahead. Thank you.
And excuse me, Andy, I presume that the years that we have no imported water are years in which we are regulated under drought conditions?
Yeah, where the water is just not available. Yeah. With regard to water levels, we draw water level contour maps like this over time. we're showing here the Chino Basin, where groundwater elevations are higher in the northern parts of the basin, and the groundwater flows perpendicular to these contours. So it flows here from the east to the west and then starts turning south. We're looking at a contour map in spring 2000 where the pumping at the desalter wells really hadn't started yet. So this is pre-desalter groundwater levels, pre-OBMP groundwater levels. You can see pumping depressions up here in the Pomona Montclair area and one over here, a small one around the Harupa well field. But generally groundwater flowing from the north to the south, coming down here towards Prado where it discharges as rising groundwater. We can fast forward to 2012 and then 2014. What's really changed here is that groundwater levels have gone down over on the eastern side of the basin, gone up here a little bit on the western side of the basin, and down here in the desalter well field, we're starting to gain hydraulic control where the contours are circling these desalter wells here. Water's flowing towards the wells. When we subtract these maps from each other, we get groundwater elevation change maps. And so what you see in green is where groundwater levels have risen over the time period. And in this case, it's 2012 to 2014. And in red is where groundwater levels have declined over that time period. And really over these last 2 years, even though they've been relatively dry years, the Chino Basin is a very large storage reservoir. We haven't seen that much in terms of groundwater level changes over these last couple of years. But if we go...
Andy?
Yeah.
A question again, sorry.
It's okay.
We spoke with a farmer the other day, and we see the water on the west end of that map. The water level is really down in that area.
In this area here?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Can you tell us why?
I would speculate that that's a very localized condition, because when we look at what's happened over the last 14 years, it's over here on the west end where we've actually had groundwater levels have been increasing. Hmm. And I can also tell you some of the reasons for that occurring. First of all, agricultural production has moved out of that area as we've urbanized. We've also brought recycled water to that area too, which has reduced the amount of agricultural pumping. And then we also have subsidence management over that area where the municipal pumpers have backed off too. So I would need to better understand this particular well, and there might be some nearby pumping that's causing the water level drawdown in that particular well. That would be my
thank you.
My first guess.
Thank you.
When you look at this long-term water level change map from 2000 to 2014, you can see the desalters causing drawdown over here, at least on the east side of the desalter well field. And generally across the eastern part of the basin, 25 feet or so of water level decline. On the west, we've seen that increase for some of the reasons that I just mentioned to you. And then there's also been the 6,500 acre feet per year of wet water recharge that's required to be recharged in management zone one. So what you're seeing here is essentially the implementation of the OBMP and what we generally thought was going to happen. We wanted to bring water levels up on the west side of the basin to mitigate some of the perceived imbalance of recharge and discharge in the northern part of MZ1 and the subsidence over here in the southern part of MZ1.
Jeffrey Vandenheuvel.
Andy, the numbers that you show here for groundwater elevation, are these model-generated numbers or are they actual field observations?
These are field observations, and we take the field observations, we put them in our centralized database, and then we bring them back out and we hand-draw water level contour maps that I showed earlier. And then we interpolate between those contours to get a surface in our GIS programs. And then we subtract those two surfaces from two different time periods to come up with this color-shaded map of change. So it is all based on measured information.
Andy, I've got a question. You know, given that the desalter wells are drying down in the central part, what is creating the drawdown in the northeastern?
Up here?
Yeah.
I don't have an exact answer for you. I think that part of it is because we are in a period of controlled overdraft through the basin reoperation, right, where we're pumping down here, but we're not having the replenishment obligation that would normally be recharged up there. Okay. There may also be transfers at play here where we're not pumping the full pumping right over on the west side, and those pumping rights are being transferred to other appropriators on the east side, that's where the pumping may be occurring instead of on the west side. So that may be at play as well. We also generally are more rich in recharge facilities over on the west side and over than we are over here on the east side too. So it's probably multiple explanations all working together. We're in a relatively dry period here too over the last, since the OB&P was implemented. It's been a relatively dry period. We've only had a couple of wet years. So that's probably playing a role as well.
Can I ask on that? Andy, the Rialto Colton Basin, does that have an inflow out of that basin historically into our basin?
Yes. The answer is generally yes. And so I think where you're getting at is, could water level changes over here be affecting the inflow?
We've been reading newspaper stories about that Rialto Colton Basin. I believe there's been a lot of pumping going on over there. So very possibly there's a lot less outflow out of that basin, natural outflow out of that basin into our basin as they draw that basin down.
Yeah. And I think for Chino Basin in general, that same might be said about the Six Basins and the Cucamonga Basin as well. Wherever we have upgradient basins that are contributing inflow, that's a part of the water budget of the Chino Basin. And so if there's a change in that underflow, it's going to affect the yield of our basin.
I have a question.
Yes.
For years, we've always heard about there's a strata of water at 1,000 to 1,200 feet. Is that true or not?
The depth of our basin?
At the bottom of the basin, there's a strata of water that hasn't been tapped at 1,000 to 1,200 feet.
I'm generally, the basin is deepest here in the center and west side. The bottom of our groundwater basin is consolidated bedrock that really doesn't have very much producible groundwater in it.
Okay.
And so I don't think that that's true. There's not a big reservoir of water down there that can readily contribute a lot of recharge to our basin. But there is some water that exists in fractures or in consolidated sediments down there that may be able to seep up and contribute recharge. But we think it's relatively minor, and we pretty much ignore it in our modeling. We put a hard bottom at the bottom of of our model, and it doesn't recharge our groundwater model.
Because the pump drillers, you know, our water used to be 300 to 500 feet, and then the drillers always, well, if you want more water, we can go down another 500 feet.
Yeah.
And I just wondered.
Well, that's true, but I think going deeper than 1,500 feet or, you know, 1,000 to 1,500 feet, you're not going to find much producible water down there.
Right. Yeah. Andy, going back when they first set in Safefield, you know, more than likeliness the question is that Rialto Basin or hanging had inflow from that basin into our basin here. Now, in your calculations and your models, do you consider how much water is pumped in that basin and the reduced inflow into our basin, which would affect Safefield?
This basin here is not a part of our model domain. We make assumptions as to what crosses the boundary here, and during our calibration process, we can refine that so that we can match water levels in our groundwater basin during our calibration period. So we have good estimates of what we think is coming across there. And on a future projection, if we think that's going to decline because that basin has plans to draw down water levels, we can reduce that amount of subsurface boundary inflow.
That would affect our safe yield.
What's that?
That would affect our safe yield.
It'll absolutely affect the yield of the basin, yeah, because that's one of your inputs. Like any other input, that's one of them.
Historically, has Rialto Colton been at a higher level on their side of the barrier or at a lower level?
They've had a lot of contamination recently that has limited the amount of water that they've been able to pump. So water levels, I believe, have been a little higher than historically. But that's a relatively small basin, and during a dry period like this, it can decline faster than the Chino Basin would. So it fluctuates like most smaller groundwater basins. Yeah.
The county's consultants on the perchloric plume up there have shown over history that the water level in Rialto Colton's basin was about 300 feet higher that barrier than it was in the Chino Basin, and now they're even.
Okay, so it has come down recently.
Jeff? Pardon me. Andy, where did you leave off?
That's the end of my ground. That's the end of the state of the basin report.
Is that all?
That's all for right now. But what I do encourage you to do, what right now this report is in draft format that's being reviewed by Watermaster staff. This is an example of the 2012 report that is on the Watermaster's website. There will be a 2014 report up there soon. Again, I'm going to come back and talk to you about other sections in this at future meetings. This is a very good reference for you. If you have technical questions, we've written this in a way that it's understandable to everyone. It's got good maps. It's got history. So I would encourage you to use it as a reference. You can always come to ask us questions, but if you want something answered right away, it might exist in these reports.
State of California.
So there's the two versions of the agricultural pumping that are in there.
Turn your mic on, please, Mike. Right on top.
It's on. It's a bit closer, I think. Is that better?
Yes.
Hear me now?
Yeah.
So two versions of the agricultural pumping. Was that ever shown before in the, or is this the first year?
Yes, I believe it was shown before. I can
So in the new modeling, did it change based on your new modeling?
That's the question I was going to ask, yes. Are there big changes?
Yes, it has. It has been shown in old reports, and I'm going to have to get back to you on the answer to that question. There was a time when we used Watermaster's production records, and we switched and used the water duty method from... Prior to 2003, we used water duty methods to estimate agricultural production. And I can't tell you exactly when that switch occurred. It might have been in the 2007 modeling. That's my recollection. But for this recent round of modeling that's being used to help redetermine the safe yield, we've been using the estimated agricultural production from water duty methods.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Any more questions?
Yeah, I have one just for next time you come. If we dump all of our reclaimed water back in the basin, how long would that last before we finally ran out of water?
I don't know, but I think we're pretty close to maximizing out the reclaimed water recharge.
Okay, in other words, how much is lost when you dump all the reclaimed water back in the basin?
How much is lost from that amount of recharge?
You're dumping water back in that's been used.
Uh-huh.
And somewhere along the way, there's going to be a loss.
Yeah, it's going to get pumped back out.
But not 100%, huh?
Pretty much. With these desalter wells in place, they're pretty much we're pretty much capturing all the water that we recharge in the northern part of the basin. It's being captured somewhere along the way.
But somewhere along the way, some evaporates, especially in agriculture.
Oh, okay. So you're saying, well, when it goes into the basin, there will be some evaporative losses, but it's going to be minimal.
That's what I mean. Without any water from the outside to help recharge, how long we last recharging only with our reclaimed water?
We haven't run that model per
good
production.
Question. Andy, quick question.
Yeah.
I didn't like the word soon.
Soon for what?
S-O-O-N.
Yeah, what did
You'll have that, the 214 on the website soon. And right now we're in discussions, you're aware of that.
Yes.
Regarding the basin. When do you think you'll have it up?
Before the end of the fiscal year, for sure. It'll probably be more like May or early June before it'll be published. But I also encourage you to even go back and look at this 2012. Things in this basin don't change that rapidly. This is not a report on safe yield. This is a report on water levels and recharge and groundwater quality. All that doesn't change that much in 2 years, but it will be slightly different.
Peter, if we want to refer to Andy's report, and we're referring to specific items, can Andy provide that to us if we call him? I think you know where I'm going with this. I'm just wondering, he has some good stuff there. That would be helpful. Now, you know, May is around the corner.
You know, as long as the report's in draft stage, the answer would be that, you know, we're not going to, we would prefer not to release information if the report's in draft.
Okay.
When the report becomes
Understood.
Final, it's all there. And again, what Andy suggested, I think, is a very good suggestion, is the 2012 report is there and it's available, and it's only missing 2 years' worth of data from this report. So the data is available. And as always, if you have a specific question, you want specific information, we can provide that to you. Just hesitate with a report that's not been finalized.
Then I'm going to pick on you, Peter, instead of Andy. Your staff is to review this. Well, you have reviewed it by May.
That's the plan.
Thank you. Plan. Yep. Any more questions of Andy, our engineer? Andy?
I have one more report.
No, I don't. I'm just trying to catch up. Okay, I hear none. Let's move on.
As some of you may know, we have elevated groundwater quality objectives that we got from the regional board. The reason why we went and asked the regional board to elevate our groundwater quality objectives for TDS and nitrates is so that we could do the recycled water recharge that we had planned in the OBMP. As part of the deal to get those elevated water quality objectives, we as a water master, along with IUA, had to make what we call maximum benefit commitments to do certain programs and projects to get and keep those elevated groundwater quality objectives. What those commitments are is one was to obtain hydraulic control with the desalter wells. The second was that these desalter wells in total were to ultimately get to 40,000 acre feet per year production, to implement surface water and groundwater monitoring programs so that we could report on things like hydraulic control and how groundwater quality is changing in our basins, to implement the Chino Basin Facilities Improvement Program, so to build out and improve the recharge facilities. That's been done. To manage the TDS and nitrate concentrations in our recycled water, and to manage the TDS and nitrate concentrations in the artificial recharge that occurs in our basin, not just recycled water, but all imported and stormwaters as well. And then to every 3 years go about a process to estimate how TDS and nitrate concentrations are changing in groundwater over time. Those are the maximum benefit commitments. I'm going to highlight hydraulic control and our progress towards 40,000 acre feet, but we talk about all of these commitments in this report. This report, too, is in draft format right now. It's being reviewed by IUA staff and Water Master staff. We need to submit this report to the regional board. For hydraulic control, one of the main ways that we demonstrate hydraulic control is through groundwater level monitoring. These white dots represent the desalter wells. These green lines represent water level elevation contours that were drawn in the year 2000 before these desalters turned on to try to achieve hydraulic control. So as you can see, the groundwater flows from the north to the south and goes right through the well field. You don't see the effects of the well field because these wells weren't pumping in 2000. But if we fast forward to what 2014 looks like, you can see all the pumping depressions around these wells that are showing a flow field from the Santa Ana River where surface water recharges groundwater and then flows towards these wells to be ultimately consumed by these wells and sent to the desalter treatment plants. You can see groundwater that's flowing from the north to the south. Its final destination are these wells also. That's true for this whole eastern side of the well field. But over here on the western side, you can still see that groundwater flows perpendicular to these contours and flows past the so-called Chino Creek desalter well field. This is because in 2014, this well field hasn't really begun production in earnest yet. And we don't really predict that it's going to pump too much. This well field went in with the thought that it was going to pump several thousand acre feet per year, but the hydraulic properties of the sediments in this part of the basin are pretty poor. And we think these wells are only going to produce maybe 1,500 to 1,800 acre feet per year, quite a bit less than what we had planned. It's going to be difficult to show the same type of hydraulic control that we have on the east side over here on the west side with such a poor producing desalter well field. So we went back to the regional board with these results, and we modeled with our groundwater flow model how much water are we really talking about that's going to flow past this well field once it's up and running. And it turns out that if these wells pump about 1,500 to 1,800 acre feet per year, we're going to have less than 1,000 acre feet of water flow underground past this well field down towards Prado. And the regional board has agreed that that is definitionally hydraulic control if we can get these wells to produce 1,500 to 1,800 acre feet per year. We expect these wells to all be online and producing that volume of water later this year in 2015. And at that point in time, we will have demonstrated to the regional board that we have hydraulic control. The regional board is still going to require us to do the groundwater level monitoring and draw these maps, and to every 5 years update our groundwater flow model and run projections as to how much groundwater is flowing past this well field. And they always want to see it to be reported as less than 1,000 acre feet per year in order to have hydraulic control and still allow us to have our elevated groundwater quality objectives.
Andy?
Yes.
I got a question. Put that ladder on Central Avenue there. What do you call it? The Riley Fault?
Yes, yeah, Central Avenue is up here, I think.
Right. That barrier there, is there any of the, when you pump the desalters, or the change of the hydrology, is that coming across that barrier on Central?
That barrier is somewhat distant from where these wells are pumping, so the effects of pumping these wells on water levels up here is going to be minimal. I don't even think we're going to be able to see it. Plus, that barrier is only in the very deepest part of the aquifer, and here these wells are pumping in a very shallow part of the aquifer. They're trying to pump the shallower, higher TDS, higher nitrate concentration waters.
So one of the reasons why I asked that, you got desalter well 1, 2, and 3 on Euclid Avenue.
Yeah.
We have a well 16 right by the Cypress Channel, and we actually lost production where we actually had to reduce, set the bowls differently, have the well redone to 700 gallons per minute versus 1,100 gallons.
Yeah.
So we did notice a lot of change in that area.
Yeah. These wells here are deeper, the 1, 2, and 3. They pump from the deeper, more confined part of the aquifer system, and that really does change water levels in that deeper, confined system. And so if you have a nearby well, then you will see an effect. Yeah. As far as production at these desalter wells, well, you see the Chena 1 desalter colored in yellow, and you see its production ramp up here and get to about 15,000 acre feet per year over time. Chena 2 desalter wells, they're shown in orange here, so we're almost up to 30,000 acre feet. We've made a commitment to get to 40,000 acre feet. In red here in 2014, the Chena Creek desalter wells, these two in particular, have just begun pumping some water. So you see just a tiny bit of production associated with pumping at the Chena Creek well field. It'll be a little bit greater than this, but we're going to need more wells to get to 40,000 acre feet per year. So the CDA is busily constructing these two wells here, and they're going to choose a third well up here to try to get to 40,000 acre feet per year and meet this commitment to the regional board. And they're expecting to have these wells here online and pumping at some point in time in 2016. My last graphic here, I probably should have shown with the earlier discussion on hydraulic control, but this, we do this groundwater modeling to demonstrate the state of hydraulic control out into the future when all these wells are pumping at 40,000 acre feet per year in total. And what these little arrows are showing is the direction of groundwater flow. And you can see all these arrows converging on this side of the desalter well field on the wells, so it's very clearly demonstrating hydraulic control. But we see some of these arrows bypassing the Chena Creek desalter well field. This model information is what we use to estimate how much of this groundwater is flowing past the desalter well field.
Where's the river on that?
The Santa Ana River is right down here.
We're taking some of the river, too?
Yeah, so the river, you can see there's recharge that occurs along the river, and you can see these arrows flowing towards these desalter wells and then converging in on them. So this is the so-called Santa Ana River underflow.
Thanks.
On the Chena Creek side, where is that water that's slipping by? I mean, where in the strata?
We think it's mostly in the shallow aquifer system. The whole aquifer system over in this area is not very permeable, so there's not a whole lot of flow, but it's in the shallower part of the system. Where these wells are perforated and constructed is where this water is flowing under. And that is that is what the regional board is most concerned about, is the flow in the shallow part of the aquifer system, because that's where TDS concentrations and nitrate concentrations are the highest. The deeper part of the aquifer that are not that concerned with, because it's very good quality water. And what they're concerned about is, are activities in Chena North causing poor quality water to make its way down into Prado and ultimately rise and degrade the quality of the Santa Ana River, which is used by Orange County as a water resource?
I understand the theory. I'm just wondering whether we've ever found the flow.
In the deep part of this?
I'm starting to go dig wells. I mean, I remember 10 years ago, the estimate was 7,000 acre feet a year were flowing that we were leaking. I think that was the number. That's why we were going to try to produce it. And then we went out and started drilling wells, and you can't get any.
Yeah.
So now 1,500 acre feet a year, we'll get the amount you lose down under 1,000. So that tells me that the number's 2,500 or less. And, you know the model's showing it's there, but have you ever witnessed it? Have you ever seen it? It seems like it's a pretty small area. You ought to be able to see it coming up somewhere.
You know, when they drilled these wells here, they drilled deeper than 150 feet. Some of these wells, they drilled a borehole down to 700 feet, and especially as you get further and further to the west here, Once you get below 100, 150 feet, it's almost all clay going down from there. So what we discovered when we drilled these deep boreholes over here is that the geology is just different than we once thought, that it's much more clay rich, especially in the deeper portions of the aquifer. So that's my engineer's report. I'm happy to continue to ask questions.
I maybe should have asked this. On the basin, state of the basin report, is there any data or explanation about water mass and storage count?
No. No, this is mostly an accounting of the physical nature of the basin.
Okay, so what might be happening in terms of water going into, you know, water that's in storage accounts and not pumped is not being tracked in the basin?
Is not being tracked in the state of the basin report. Is that more of a Water Master annual report?
Yeah.
And so if I recall from the slide you had up there, you showed quite stable or slightly declining water levels between 2012 and 2014.
Yeah.
So would it be safe to say that if there was any increase in storage accounts during those periods of time, that would have caused, had that water actually been produced, it would have
been lower? I think that's more of a question for Danny. I'm not well versed on the storage account time history. No, it is not. Yeah.
A history question. When you look at the entire basin, is there a clay layer through the entire basin? When we drill those wells?
The west side of the basin, let me get back to a basin-wide look.
Well, you said this, when you went down to 700 feet.
Yes.
With all clay.
Right over here. I would say in general, Mr. Feenstra, that the west side of the basin, there's many more clay layers in general on the west side than there are on the east side. And what you see also is that these clay layers are responsible for the subsidence that we've seen, that they're the compressible sediments. And so that's the only place where we've been seeing subsidence of any magnitude is on the west side too. Yeah, and I'll come back next month and talk more about subsidence.
Well, I'll come back to that one. It's sort of a nostalgia history question about having a clay layer and whether dairy agriculture has caused nitrate infestation into the basin itself. Well, you have a clay layer there that doesn't allow that to happen.
Okay.
Yeah. Any more questions of Andy? Excellent report. Thank you. Don't be surprised if you get a call when you're not supposed to. General Manager, Joe! This is your big time of the year.
Yes, sir.
All right, we're listening.
Budget time. I have two items to report, Chair, members of the agricultural pool. The 2015-2016 budget schedule, upcoming this Wednesday, April 15th, we will be presenting the fiscal year 15-16 budget. We're doing it a little bit differently this year. We're going to, instead of having two workshops, we're calling this the budget presentation. Budget distribution. There's been some discussion in past years of people who would wish to get the budget a week or so early. What we're doing this year is this is going to be, again, the first time that anyone to the public gets a copy of the budget. But then we're going to be doing a workshop next Tuesday. It would be Tuesday the 21st at 9:30. So that gives everyone basically almost a week to look at it, to have questions. And then if needed, we would be doing a third workshop number two. That would be on April 29th at 9:30. The 15th workshop is basically to review kind of a 30,000 foot look at the budget. There's really four components of the budget. There's the salary staffing budget, there's the general and administration expenses, then there's the legal expenses, then there's the engineering budget. So we'll be looking at that. If the group who attends wants to really dig down and get into the weeds and and look at all of the detail, we can certainly do that. We're looking, again, trying to keep it at a top level and then have everyone come back with a workshop with their questions. The purpose of these workshops and the budget presentation is to get us a successful completion in May with the budget.
I think we got a notice that the chairmen's will meet on the budget, chairmen's of all the pools. Is that part of a workshop? Don't we have a meeting this month, Peter, with all the chairmen regarding the budget?
I don't think so, Mr. Chairman.
Oh?
I don't think so.
Something I thought we hoped for, you know. Okay, keep going.
The second item to report on is the Exhibit G water transfers. If you recall, there's about $1.1 million worth of water that's being transferred. I issued those invoices to the appropriated pool members on March 30th. The Exhibit G requirements state that the appropriators pay on or before June 30th. So far, I've received two payments. At the appropriated pool, I thank them and tried not to be...
disrespectful?
No.
forceful?
Yeah, pushy. Thank you, Pete. The June 30th date is a hard date. That's when they're required. If they pay early, that's great, because the quicker that I can get all of the money cashed in the bank, the faster I can pay all of the non-ag. Last year, there were some appropriators who paid very early. There were some that paid in the April and May time frame, and then there were one or two that paid right on the June 30th. So this year is the second year that Exhibit G. We'll see where it basically comes through, but the requirement for the appropriated pool is to pay on or before June 30th. That concludes my report.
Thank you. Any questions of Joe? Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Peter, we saved the best for last.
Mr. Chairman, good afternoon again. Quick report, a couple of items. One is a brief presentation by Sylvie Lee. You know Sylvie, she works for IUA. I asked Sylvie to join us and give a brief presentation on their integrated resources planning effort. And the reason I asked for the update today is that IUA has asked for the use of Wildermuth Engineering Services in this effort. And so since this is something that will be coming through the pool, I thought it would be good for you to get the bigger picture from Sylvie. So with that, Sylvie.
Welcome to the Ag Pool. Glad to have you here.
Good afternoon. Thank you for letting us do this presentation. So I wanted to give a brief update on the Integrated Water Resources Plan. The Integrated Water Resources Plan, or IRP, is intended to be a long-term strategy on water resources management for the IUA service area within the Chino Basin. It's intended to provide water resources management for the near-term focused, but also to provide a roadmap for the long-term. And our long-term vision at this time, the planning date is about 2040. So in terms of doing projected water demands and then water supplies that are available, that's the Integrated Resources Plan. So this works. I know how to point it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. So we've been working on this since about August 2013, and having started working on it, we have a number of water resource supply alternatives. But what we wanted to do is to go towards planning for the future, which has a lot of criteria in it that makes it uncertain. Want to make sure that we have enough input from the various members, our member agencies, IUA's member agencies, and having the sound technical basis and having input from them to develop the IRP planning document. One of the most fundamental ones that we focus on when we create this IRP is to have a demand forecast. So as you have different conditions, so there's the drought declaration, long-term impacts of drought, new laws and requirements that might have the new development have a different outcast, forecast of what the demands would look like. All of those kind of dictate where what we need to plan for in terms of long term. So what you see over there is that gray box, the triangle. It's kind of like, I call it as an alligator jaw. So it kind of gives you the ranges of which of the demands that you could look for in terms of the 2040 and even in the longer term of 2050. So where you set the path right now has a longer implication of what the future demands would look like. So some of the supplies that we're looking at in terms of long-term water resources planning, I think we look at conjunctive use, water transfers, additional inner ties with neighboring agencies. So if we were to bring in some additional recycled water from, let's say, Hurupa Community Services District, how that actually affects into in terms of planning within this service area. And then there's other categories of projects of supply offsets. So if you're looking at the governor's declaration and you're going forward and doing more conservation programs and conservation efforts, there are those types of programs as well. So all of this, where we are today and wanting to do this, is talk about, we wanted to take all of that input and then a couple of modeling efforts. The first one would be with Wildermuth, where we wanted to actually have the groundwater basin to be modeled based on any one of those portfolios that you chose. So the long-term conservation efforts, long-term climate impacts, recharge, injection, any one of those, how does that actually behave in a not just for the short term, but as a long term, and to kind of have that more integrated with the groundwater basin, with the IRP. So that's the first effort that we want to have done with Wildermuth. And based on those results, our intent is to work with the IUA member agencies to kind of develop portfolios of water supply and have those then be modeled through a resiliency testing. And we utilized RAND back in 2007 before when we moved forward with the recycled water program and a lot of the conservation efforts. So again, that would be done in order to finalize the portfolio selection for the IRP. So that's a very short, high-level overview of what we're doing in terms of the integrated resources planning and how we intend to use the Wildermuth modeling efforts to tie into the IRP. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Can you leave that on the board for a minute? Does anybody have any questions on next steps? Outstanding. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, this Wildermuth services will be provided by a letter agreement between IUA and Watermaster. IUA board has approved that, and it'll be coming through the pools advisory and board process probably in May. So you'll see that next month coming through.
Thank you.
Next item on my report is an announcement that we're adjusting the way that we make information available to you and changing the structure of the meetings that we have. You might recall we have a steering committee that was put together to help assemble the RMPU amendment in 2012 and 2013. That's called the RMPU Steering Committee. And since the RMPU was concluded, that committee met on a quarterly basis to get updates. While projects were being implemented, we instituted the Joint Projects Committee, and every pool was asked to identify a couple of dedicated representatives, in your case with Pete Hall and Jeff Pearson. What we're starting to see emerge is that as projects from the past before the RMPU and RMPU projects and new projects are coming up and we want to make this information available to you, having those two meetings happen doesn't necessarily bring the information to you as efficiently as possible. So we're combining these two efforts into a new committee that we're calling the Recharge Investigations and Projects Committee. And so when you see that name appear in future meetings, it will be the third Thursdays of the month, same timing as the Joint Projects Committee. It is a blending of the two committees that we're trying to operate in the past. We would recommend that you leave the same designated representatives, Jeff and Pete. This committee meeting is open to everyone to attend. Everybody will be seeing the agenda. Everybody will be notified. And at times, there will be, almost all the time, there will be some information about projects. And on occasion, as we have noteworthy developments in RMPU implementation, there'll be that information coming through that process as well.
We think Pete and Jeff have done a pretty good job, so have no fear, Pete. I can't see your face. Thanks for the work you do. Anything else, Peter?
That concludes my report, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Tracy, do you have anything to bring up today? Let's talk about the information items. They're all listed. You've had a chance to look at them. Do you have any questions? Hearing none. Pool member comments. I have one. Do any other board members have something they want to bring up at this time? I had hoped that that Dave Crosley would have stayed. We'll hope to have him at next meeting. This is a long meeting today. Dave Crosley is head of the Water Department in Chino. I have been asked by several local property owners about the large Chino treatment plant water pumping station on Schaefer up between Euclid and Bonneville. Many questions have come up, sort of like how much water are they pumping? What effect will it have on local wells? Other questions are, why have they hooked an entire loop back to the city of Chino with the pumps in the Ontario ag area? So that was sort of surprising to us. So I just want to try and get this on the agenda, or at least have Dave speak to that at one of our next meetings and express what they're really doing there. And it's never come up at the Water Master, and it's something that I think maybe should have. So if you'll follow up on that, Peter, that would be helpful. I'll also follow up with Dave.
Mr. Chairman, I will. I'm not so sure the context that Water Master has brought into this.
It's not a matter of the Water Master, does it? It's a matter of the actual concern.
Okay.
We have a concern, and there's no other place for them to go but here. So we're certainly going to honor that request.
Bob, it's the same as Chino Hills has a well right off Central in Chino. Same thing.
Yeah, maybe the same thing. We didn't expect it to loop to the through the entire area. People may have questions that you don't, Glenn. So well, Bill, all those people have questions.
There's no one stopped anybody, I guess.
No. Nope.
And there's a big well going in on Mountain, too.
You said the favorite word, I guess. So well, we need to do more than guess. We're going to go into a confidential session. This is your chance to bring up anything else for this board meeting before we go into closed session.
I have a question.
Yes, Marilyn, please.
You said that we're going into closed session to hear Scott Slater.
Mr. Slater's going to come and talk with us.
So I thought, and I'm just trying to clarify, I thought he was coming to talk to us not in closed session, and then possibly we were going to go into closed session afterwards. I'm just a little bit confused.
You should be confused. I guess, Marilyn, under the rules, they're very tight rules, called facilitation, who can be involved, who can't be involved. It's been very apparent from day one
right.
that we couldn't be involved. So we're thrilled to have him here today.
No, what I meant is, why is he coming to closed session? Why is he not just going
to
present?
I don't think it would be appropriate to be in a public session. And Tracy, I don't know if you agree with that.
Marilyn, is your question about whether or not he's in the closed session now, or do we have we plan on have a separate closed session in advance of his meeting?
We are. We have 15 minutes.
Or are you asking if the meeting that we are going to have with Mr. Slater is public?
Both, but I guess we can talk about that in our first closed session, so I don't have to discuss it right now. I just thought we were going straight into closed session with Mr. Slater coming. So if we're going to have a first closed session separately, we can discuss what I just asked.
I don't think it was his intent, Marilyn, to come and speak to us in public session. We're dealing with a facilitation process that we may or may not agree with. Jim Kuban.
Well, I disagree with that, and the reason is that none of us here have signed any kind of confidentiality thing. So, you know, I'm very much interested to see what he has to say, but he is bound by those same rules. So I don't expect to hear anything, even if we were in closed session, that he couldn't say in open session, because his hands are tied.
So why don't we just discuss this issue in our first closed session so we can decide how we want to
proceed? Well, why don't we do that? I think that's a good idea.
Is that okay, Gene?
Peter, our meeting was called. Thank you. Our meeting was adjourned at 3:38.
No action.
Thank you. God bless you all.